This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In the home stretch, we'll talk with Jessica Kemp from CPEX. The Smart Growth Summit is in the offing, but we're joined now by Dr. Eric Robinson from the University of South Carolina, where he teaches media law at the campus at Columbia. He is a graduate of the Manship School's PhD program and the Riley Center for Media and Public Affairs at LSU's Manship School will host libel and political campaigns, How Far Is Too Far?, spotlighting what political figures can and cannot legally say during campaigns. It's slated for the 13th, as in 2 days, and it is open to the public. And good morning to you, Dr. Robinson. Dr. Eric Robinson, good morning to you, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, well, the event is scheduled from 2 to 4 on Wednesday at the Manship School's Holiday Forum. And Dr. Robinson, we've had a case here in Louisiana. An attack ad in the governor's race was pulled from the airwaves Friday after claiming that Governor Edwards' military buddy landed a contract worth up to $65 million, even though the contract was never awarded. Truth in Politics, a 501c founded by Lane Grigsby, launched the ad, which claims that after Edwards was elected, backroom deals began and that his roommate at West Point landed a state contract worth up to $65 million. This was a lie, and it was pulled. But I've seen evidence in the past in which people lied about other people in campaigns, and the ads were not pulled. Where is that drawing? Where is the distinction? Where's the line drawn?
Well, politicians and candidates are always stretching the truth and maybe spinning things. Where it becomes a legal problem is where they say something that's untrue, that they know is untrue, and it hurts the reputation of the person they're talking about.
Is there any legal recourse for somebody who has been defamed in a case like this?
Well, there's the practical and the theoretical. Theoretically, political candidates could sue each other for these things. But as a practical matter, once the campaign is over and someone wins and someone loses, the interest in pursuing it wanes, and it's just going to extend the claim that was made in the first place and give it more legs. So it's often not worth the trouble.
Is it getting worse?
I don't know. I mean, I look at some of the history of political campaigns in my classes. And Jefferson and John Adams, back in the early days, had political ads in newspapers at the time, claiming one was anti-God and the other was immoral. So I think this really goes back a long way.
Well, a 1962 television speech accused U.S. Senate incumbent Russell Long of Louisiana of having connections to organized crime and corrupt unions. It led to a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. Many people may not know this, that Louisiana was the epicenter for this. It changed American libel law. The case is reckless disregard, Sanama versus Thompson, the transformation of libel law, and it's authored by our guest, Dr. Eric Robinson of the LSU Manship School, now at the University of South Carolina. Why is this case of 57 years ago so sweeping today, Sanama versus Thompson?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court in 1964 totally redefined libel law in a case called New York Times versus Sullivan. But over the next 20 years, really, the court refined what it meant, and St. Amant versus Thompson, which the court decided in 1968, was a major link in that chain, redefining libel law in the 60s and 70s.
The Sanama case, you say, was once called the most important Supreme Court libel decision, but you also say it has not received the attention it warrants. Why not?
Because it got lost in those other cases. I mean, there was a whole litany of cases literally over the next 20 years after New York Times versus Sullivan that refined what Sullivan meant, and the St. Amant case defined what actual malice meant, which was the test they applied in the Sullivan case. But there were other cases that also defined when actual malice applied and other various aspects of the New York Times decision to define the libel law we have today.
So actual malice is an imperative even in political speech.
Well, whenever there's an elected official or a public figure, which includes candidates for public office, if they are accusing someone of libeling them, they have to show that this person who made the statement acted with what's called actual malice.
Well, this is certainly a part of the fabric of American life, and now we have the Internet, which has taken this to a new level. And of course, a lot of times people do this anonymously now. That makes it even more difficult, doesn't it?
Yes, and there's a whole body of law developing on when you can go to a website like Twitter or Facebook and get records if you don't know who posted it, to find out who it was, or if they've deleted it, to get the archive. I mean, that's a whole new area of law that's been developing with the merging of social media.
Well, the book is Reckless Disregard, Sanoma versus Thompson and the Transformation of Libel Law. The author is media law professor at South Carolina, the University of South Carolina, and 2016 Manship School PhD graduate Eric Robinson, who hails from New York and came this way and got his PhD. And we look forward to another visit with you. It's certainly an interesting time in which we live, and we appreciate your insights today, Dr. Robinson. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're joined now by Jessica Kemp, who is Vice President of the Center for Planning Excellence, and this is an important time for CPEX and for our community. It's Smart Growth Summit time. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us about what's going to happen in the next few days.
Sure, thank you. Actually, the summit is going to be tomorrow only. We've consolidated our agenda this year. It's the 14th annual Smart Growth Summit, and our focus this year is on climate change impacts and how we can incorporate those concerns into our planning efforts. So we'll be talking about the broader impacts of climate change, you know, not just the flooding that we've seen, but impacts on financial markets, health, housing, real estate, infrastructure investments, and socioeconomic equity. And most importantly, we'll talk about what to do. These needs are growing and they're urgent and resources are limited. So we need to have an inspiring and data-driven conversation about what kinds of solutions we need.
How difficult is it to embrace this topic in this area in particular, in which we rely heavily on industry, which, of course, affects the climate? And we have a president, of course, who has said that climate change is a hoax started by the Chinese. And that president is very popular in some places in Louisiana. Does that make your job more difficult?
It does, but it kind of doesn't matter. We're going to do it anyway. These problems are real. If Louisiana wants to thrive, we have to figure this out, and we have to come together. And we, you know, when CPEX works in communities throughout the state, regardless of political, you know, affiliations, people are dealing with these problems on a day-to-day basis. It's costing them money. It's impacting their health. It's impacting our economy. So we don't have a choice. We have to figure this out.
Who are some of those who will be on hand tomorrow for the summit?
Well, we have our opening speaker is Ross Duvall of Heartland America. He's also a Walton Family Foundation fellow. He's going to be talking about what makes small towns and mid-sized metros really thrive. We'll also have Calvin Gladney, who's the CEO of Smart Growth America. He's going to talk about the big three challenges of our era, which are climate change, health, and equity, and talk about how those three things are interrelated. We'll also have former HUD Secretary Ron Sims talking about zip code equity, which again is talking about how where a person lives has a huge impact on their health outcomes, and we'll be talking about how climate change and economic disparity kind of layers onto those vulnerabilities and what kinds of planning we can do to address those, kind of that triple threat there. And we'll also have a rock star new urbanist, Mike Lydon, on the agenda. He's built an international reputation for himself, helping communities use art and bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure to bring public spaces to life and revitalize neighborhoods and corridors and communities.
All right. For those who are interested, who have an inclination to attend, how do they do it?
Well, we're very close to being sold out, but we will have some registration available tomorrow morning. So just show up and we can...
And where are we doing this?
Yeah, great question. The Shaw Center for the Arts in downtown Baton Rouge.
So we've been there many times. This is the 14th annual. Hard to believe that it's been 14 years, but the Smart Growth Summit is important for the future of this city. And believe it or not, we have some environmental issues that remain a part of our community, and they will be addressed. And Jessica, I know that you take great pride in making these issues more aware to the public. That's what it's all about.
That's right.
Well, thank you for joining us, Jessica Kemp, the vice president of CPEX, and good luck tomorrow. Is there a phone number, a listener asked, or a website where they can go and find out more information?
Yes, absolutely. Everything you need to know is at summit.cpex.org.
Summit.cpex.org. Thank you, Jessica.
Yes.
Jessica Kemp.
Thank you, Jim. Have a great day.
You too. Vice President of the Center for Planning Excellence, summit.cpex.org. Until tomorrow with General Russell Honore as our main guest. I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Matt Doyle and Kirby Ferries for producing. We're back Tuesday, same time, same place. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Stay tuned.